You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
We have a really important guest here on this morning. Karen Budd Phelan is, I guess, in the lawyer's world like I'm in, you'd call her a rock star. She has been a private property rights advocate. She has fought federal overreach, and she has worked in two administrations in the White House, one with Ronald Reagan, and here more recently, she was in the Trump administration in the Department of Interior as Deputy Solicitor of Wildlife and Parks. She was actually the lead attorney in revising the regulations implementing the Endangered Species Act. She is a fifth-generation Wyoming resident and has been an important part of advocacy for primarily agriculture, ranchers and farmers, and she and her husband are ranchers, and we're just really glad to have you on this show this morning, Karen. Welcome. How are you?
I am doing very well. I hope your listeners are doing well also.
Well, great. We appreciate you being with us. And there's so many things we could talk about that are in your toolbox, if you will. And we want to thank you for your advocacy for the little guy and gal, not only in Wyoming, but across America. But in January, we saw President Biden had issued an executive order, which was called the Executive Order on Tackling Climate Crisis at Home and Abroad. And buried way far into that executive order, there were provisions that have been called the 30 by 30 plan. And we're hopeful that you can tell us what exactly is the 30 by 30 plan, and why do we need to be aware of this?
Well, I appreciate the question, because I think that the 30 by 30 plan is something that rural America, farmers, ranchers, and local governments need to really understand. So under President Biden, one of the themes of his presidency is his concern with climate change. And he is very concerned that if we don't tackle climate change as a whole, that life on Earth as we know it is going to cease to exist into the future. And so under the 30 by 30 plan, he proposes to acquire somehow or the other an additional 440 million acres by the year 2030 to add to already the federal government control of 563 million acres of federal land that the federal government already has. And people in Montana and Wyoming and those of us in the Mountain West understand that, you know, federal control already has half of our states, or if you're in Nevada, 90% of your state. And so the idea that the federal government want to have permanent easements or take land out of production to the tune of 400 million more acres, I think is fairly frightening.
Well, I think a lot of folks here in Montana certainly could agree with that. We've had our back and forth. Of course, when I was Attorney General during President Obama's tenure, we were often in court fighting over things like the Clean Power Plan and waters of the U.S. But we have a situation now where the president doesn't have to do this by regulation alone with controlling Congress, both houses of Congress. There's certainly the possibility of doing some things through statute. How would you see the 30 by 30 plan being implemented nationwide? Is this something that would happen by regulation, by statute, or a little bit of both? Or would they use existing programs to leverage actually taking, for instance, agricultural property out of production?
Well, actually, you're seeing it by all three methods. I know that there's bills in Congress that talk about limiting production or creating more carbon credits and carbon banks and that kind of thing to try to reduce the amount of carbon in the air. By executive order, the Bureau of Land Management has already canceled oil and gas lease sales that are required under the Mineral Leasing Act. The state of Wyoming, the Western Energy Alliance, and others have already sued the administration over that, and those canceling of the lease sales was all done in the name of this 30 by 30 plan. We've seen a large change and an increase in programs to get farmers to put their lands in, like CRP or other programs where you're simply paid to not produce on agriculture lands. And I'm concerned that we're going to see more of that. We saw that kind of deal where the federal government didn't say you have to take land out of production, or like during the Arab oil crisis, they would tell states, unless you only allow driving at 55 miles an hour, we're going to take your federal highway funds. And the courts have ruled that that federal government can withhold money to get states and communities to do what the federal government wants. And so I am really worried that some of that stuff is going to rear its head again.
Well, the power of the purse is certainly something that the government has used, the federal government has used often, as you say, with the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. I'm old enough to know when that was in effect. Some other folks out there probably don't remember that, but it was supposed to be a voluntary, quote-unquote, voluntary program where if you wanted federal funds, you voluntarily enacted a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. That doesn't seem to me very voluntary at all if there are federal funds available for the states and we're supposed to get our share, but yet we're strong-armed into doing something we otherwise maybe didn't want to do. So you think that's probably one of the leverages that the government's going to use?
That would not surprise me. And that's especially hard on Western states where, as you know, when the federal government owns and controls land, it doesn't pay taxes. It doesn't pay property taxes to the counties. There's a PILT payment requirement, but you will not find a state or a locality that says that federal PILT payments make up what it would be if the land were held in private hands and you had people paying property taxes and business taxes to use the land. And so then when the federal government comes in and adds these additional, quote, voluntary conditions, in federal land states already so tied up with federal lands, it makes it incredibly difficult for governors and states to even pay for rural schools and roads and all of the things that state government has to deal with.
Well, you know, you are well versed in land use law, obviously, at both the federal and the state level. And you and I both know that major federal statutes like the Federal Land Management Policy Act or FLPMA, the Clean Water Act, all of those different acts have what we call cooperative federalism by design, where the states are supposed to have the major say in how those statutes are implemented. And my experience, and I'm sure yours too, is that depending on who's in the White House, the federal government often overlooks the cooperative federalism side of that. Do you see any legal angles, depending on what the federal government may do in implementing this 30 by 30 plan, for the states to fight back?
Excuse me. I think that there may be. One of the things that we worked on in the Trump administration was to really strengthen the ability of state and local governments to participate in federal agency decisions. If you look at the regulations we wrote implementing the National Environmental Policy Act, which had not been updated in 30 years, those regulations had additional provisions for either cooperating agency status or consistency review with state and local plans. And so we really tried to get the states and county governments more involved, because my experience in Washington, D.C. was people just didn't understand what it was like to live out here. I would tell people I grew up on a cow-calf operation in Wyoming, and people didn't even know what that meant. Or I talk about water laws and water rights being a property right, and I just get blank looks because they're like, well, it rains. Well, not in a lot of the West. It doesn't rain. We have to be able to protect these property rights. And so often the people in the East, the people in the federal government may have the best of intentions. But until you live out here and try to make a living in these large open states, you just simply don't understand. And so we really tried to strengthen the ability of counties and states to participate in federal decisions through, for example, regulations under the National Environmental Policy Act. Or we did significant regulations under the Endangered Species Act for the designation of critical habitat that really force the federal government to pay attention to what the states and the counties are saying and really take that local expertise into mind, because so often it just simply doesn't happen that way.
Well, and of course, that's my experience, too. And we look back to the Clean Power Plan and the Clean Water Act, which my office joined with a lot of other state attorneys general to actually fight back against. And we were successful in court. But what we saw was this so-called cooperation and listening ended up with listening sessions in places like Denver, which most Montanans aren't going to be able to leave the farm or the ranch or their community or their job and head to Denver. And even if you did, you didn't get much time, if any time at all, to really chime in. But I'll tell you what, we're coming up on a break here, a hard break, and we're going to come back. And I want to visit a little bit about what other organizations are doing, including the Western Congressional Caucus, and how this whole issue relates to how America feeds the world. So stay with us. This is From Montana for Montana, Voices for Montana. So if you're just joining us this morning, I'm Tim Fox filling in for Tom Schultz, and we will, in the second half of the show, have a discussion with Molly Kruckenberg, the director of the Montana Historical Society. But right now we're talking to an expert lawyer in land use, private property rights, Karen Bud Phelan. And we've been talking about the President Biden's 30 by 30 plan, which has to do with taking more land in America out of production, out of any kind of multiple use. So, Karen, you know, I see that you're going to be speaking at the Montana Stock Growers Association mid-year convention in Lewistown, and that is, of course, KXLO country over there in Lewistown, our station, partner station. And I think you're on for Friday, June 11th. What kind of message are you going to have for the stock growers about what they need to be concerned about and what they should be doing?
The message that I'm going to give to them is the same one that I have been really talking about since I've come back from Washington, D.C., is that it's not enough to just raise good cows and stay on your farm and take care of your kids and be a good citizen. People have to understand what these federal rules and policies are going to do and be a part of the discussion. I am a huge believer that local governments have significant ability to inform federal agency decisions. I don't think that a county can order the federal government out of their county, but they have a lot of rights and abilities to participate in federal agency decisions, either through consistency review with local land use plans or with state plans. The governor's got abilities to really participate in these federal decisions, and these abilities are granted by federal statute. But it all comes down to, if the state's not willing to stand up, if your county commissioners are not willing to stand up, then the federal government is not doing anything wrong if they just totally run over your local government and run over the citizens that they're supposed to protect. So it's really a call to action to get the government closest to the people, whether it's the state government or the county government, to really understand what their rights are and to stand up for the local citizens. I mean, it just amazes me that 30 by 30 proposes to add additional 440 million acres of land, plus eliminate multiple use. And we're talking hunting, fishing, grazing, anything on federal land to preserve biodiversity, when on the other hand, you've got, by 2030, the world population is going to increase to 8.5 billion people, and we've still got to figure out how to feed all those 8.5 billion people. So you've got completely opposing goals, and somehow or the other, people have got to advocate for keeping people on the land, keeping rural tax base, and for feeding that 8.5 billion people that we're going to have to feed some way or the other.
Well, to your point, you're absolutely right. And, of course, today's farmers and ranchers and communities and leaders in rural places like Montana and Wyoming and elsewhere have become active and certainly engaged, not just at the federal level, but certainly at the state and local level as well. And so I hear what you're suggesting is that, listen, we need to engage with our county commissioners, our city commissioners, our governor, our legislators. We need to make sure they understand the importance of this. And then together we need to engage with the federal government. And if they truly are asking for our input and want to do something that makes sense and that there are fewer losers than winners, then we all need to get together. And I noticed that on March 16th of this year, the Western Congressional Caucus, including Steve Daines and Matt Rosendale from Montana, and I suspect also your legislative representatives to Congress from Wyoming, wrote a letter expressing their concern and pointing out many of these facts and figures that you're talking about, including the statutory-based concept of multiple use. You mentioned that briefly, but what is multiple use as it pertains to federal lands?
Multiple use was actually a statute that was passed by Congress in the 60s under the Multiple Use Sustained Yield Act. And what that act requires for both Forest Service lands as well as BLM lands is that these lands are not national parks. They are not lands to be set aside, but they are lands that are to have a multiple uses. So whether it's hunting, whether it's access, whether it's grazing, whether it's oil and gas, timber production, all those things are to occur on these multiple use lands. Okay. Now, obviously, you can't have all uses in a single area, but Forest Service and BLM lands are managed under multiple resource land and management plans, or something. Sometimes they call them resource management plans, and those plans are required to provide all of the uses for all of the citizens, because these lands are to be opened to the citizens of the locality and the state and the nation.
Well, so I guess what I'm hearing is that not only should our ranchers and farmers be concerned about the 30 by 30 plan, but would you go so far as to say that, our recreationists, whether they be fishermen and women, hunters, maybe they've got ATVs or they like to pack their mules into areas. These are all folks that may be blocked through the 30 by 30 plan as well. Is that your take?
Absolutely. When you look at the 30 by 30 plan, right now, of the 563 million acres of federal land in the United States, the Biden administration believes only 12% of that is managed for biodiversity. And according to the Biden administration, to protect us from climate change, these lands have to be managed in their, quote, natural state, which means no use. And so if you're a recreationist, if you ride ATVs, if you use the federal lands for hiking or picnicking or whatever, under the Biden administration 30 by 30, those things also contribute to climate change, and therefore, under their view, those things will have to be eliminated. So this is really not just a resource users. This is something that any American who uses the federal lands for recreation should be really concerned about.
Well, you know, the original executive order was issued on January 27th, and within that order, it requires certain federal agencies to do certain things in some very short periods of time, 60 days and 90 days come to mind. And I noticed that just recently, a number of agencies, the Department of Interior, Department of Agriculture, Department of Commerce, and the Council on Environmental Quality, issued, I guess I'd call it a white paper, if you will, Conserving and Restoring America the Beautiful. Is that something you've had a chance to look at? I've looked at it, and it doesn't seem to really have any specifics. It's just very aspirational, and so it really doesn't tell us what the federal government has in mind for us.
I would agree. I did read the one from Department of Interior, and I was somewhat surprised that there are no specifics. I mean, it talks about these goals, and the president has set these very hard goals, but so far we really don't have the plans on how to get there. And the devil is going to be in the details. We don't have those details yet. I think that we should not be kind of lulled into thinking that this won't be so bad based on those individual plans, because there's no detail in it, and the detail is what's going to be very important to understand and to participate in.
You know, we've talked primarily about how this would affect land, if you will, whether it be public or private. But the 30 by 30 plan also includes an increase of conserving 30% of our waters. What's your feel of what does that mean? Are we talking about offshore? Are we talking about maybe another run at the waters of the U.S. regulations that were found to be illegal and unconstitutional? What do you think they have in mind there?
Well, there's certainly going to be changes to the waters of the U.S. regulations. When Trump was in office, we issued regulations that lessened the federal government's control on certain waters that were not, quote, navigable waters under the Clean Water Act. I believe that the Biden administration is supportive of more federal control, so I certainly think that's going to be an issue. I know that with regard to offshore waters in the zone that the U.S. controls, that there is going to be less use in those waters. It's pretty clear from the 30 by 30 plan that that's included as well.
Well, this is a topic that we could probably spend a week or more on, Karen, and we really appreciate the fact that you are paying attention to it, because I suspect you have not only a lot of clients that should be concerned about this, but being a rancher and a Wyoming resident yourself, it probably directly affects you as well. Any closing thoughts or comments that you have before we come up on our final hard break and have to say goodbye?
Well, first, I want to thank you and appreciate your show for recognizing that this is a legitimate concern for the citizens of Montana, whether they live in Billing or Bozeman or in so many of the little rural communities that keep Montana alive. I think that this is going to be a very interesting time for rural America. And the more we're educated, the more that people understand what can be done and what can't be done, the better off we're going to be.
Well,
it used to be that as a politician, you just worried about the big things, but now you've got to worry about this as well.
That's for sure. And of course, worry and action are certainly go hand in hand. So Karen Bud Phelan, an attorney out of Wyoming, and we can reach you at www.budphelen.com. We want to thank you for being on the show today, and stay tuned for Molly Kruckenberg coming up to talk about the Montana Historical Society after this hard break. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.